Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Talkers Magazine calls Jim Blasingame one of the best talk show hosts in the industry.
Now remember, I do my best work when I'm being worshipped as a god.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Back, it's 34 after the hour. Thanks for hanging around with us, and if you just tuned in, we're glad you're here too. My website is www.jbsba.com. I'm glad Michael Cox is joining us too, because he's an old friend of ours and a longtime member of our Brain Trust. He's senior vice president with the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas and the chief economist there. He, along with Richard Alm, also are the authors of a Pulitzer Prize nominated book, Myths of the Rich and Poor, Only the Best for My Audience. Michael Cox, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Jim. Thanks. Good to be here.
It's good to have you back, and congratulations on another outstanding annual report.
Well, this one was very timely because productivity is the issue in the economy right now. And so it was important for us to explain to people how that's not costing jobs. It's the wellspring of progress. It's the source of our increase in living standards.
Well, absolutely, and that's the title, folks. That's the title of the annual report, and it's called A Better Way, Productivity and Reorganization in the American Economy. And Michael is here partially to help us continue our discussion. As I have started earlier in the year, Michael, I think you were with us one other time this year on this. I've been trying to have what I call an honest debate about jobs in America, as opposed to the victimization type of debate that a lot of people want to have. They want to blame somebody. And what we have, and by the way, folks, I want to say one thing. Many of you probably never thought that you'd want to have a copy of an annual report from a Federal Reserve Bank. But I'm telling you, you want this one. I've been telling you this for years. This is an outstanding document. It's not, all the numbers are in the back there. All that stuff is there. It is an annual report. But There's always wonderful information, important perspectives that you and I can use in our small business. And all you got to do is go to dallasfed.org and get a copy of it. They can actually download it, can't they, Mike?
Oh, yeah, just in its entirety. You can get the whole thing from a PDF file.
Right, or they'll mail it to you, I think, if you ask them for that. Okay, Mike, productivity really started showing up on the radar screen back in the 90s, and the Federal Open Market Committee, I was tracking them pretty close. I don't have a life, so I keep up with what those guys do, and I was reporting them that on the show, and I remember saying, they're not believing what they're seeing. They're not believing their own eyes with regard to productivity, and they made some interest decisions based on actually being, I think, a little bit afraid of the productivity numbers they were seeing. What do you think?
No, I think that's wrong. I think that the Fed did a pretty good, really good job this time of ignoring 100 years of history, which is hard to do. Productivity, on average, grew at a rate of 2.3% over about 100 years from 1870 to, or 30 years from 1870 to today. But it started growing exceptionally fast in the 90s,
mm-hmm.
and that made GDP grow faster than normal. And normally, when GDP grows fast, it's growing fast because demand is rising fast, and so you have to choke it off through raising interest rates.
To prevent inflation.
Yes, because it would cause inflation.
Right.
So there was this constant nagging temptation to raise rates to shut down growth. But I was really happy to see the Fed reason through this whole thing, look at the source of the growth, that it was productivity growth, and Chairman Greenspan in particular did a wonderful job of leading the nation down a path that hadn't been explored before. This is right now a very unusual period in the American economy.
It is.
Productivity has been growing at a 4.6% rate since the third quarter of 1995. And this, you know, not ever having done that before, it would be tempting to conclude that it just couldn't happen. Yet it is, and we have let the economy grow. without thinking it's going to convert over into inflation. So we've kept rates down a really long time.
Well, they are now, and I everything that you just said, I agree with you since 2001. But in 98 and 99 or 99 and 2000, I just felt that they actually were worried that the productivity numbers they were seeing were dangerous.
You're talking about one or two periods out of a 10-year period.
Yeah.
And what I'm saying is that I went to discussion after discussion on this where people did not pull out just the history. They said something is different out there.
Right.
And they actually listened.
Stand by, Mike. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to have some more of this debate on productivity. We'll get Michael to give us some more good information and how this affects your small business. He's got some good information for you, too. 20 Till, stay with us. We'll be right back.
Band is blowing Dixie. Double.
Back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with Michael Cox, Senior Vice President and Chief Economist for the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. He works with another member of our Brain Trust, Dr. Bob McTeer, the President of the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. Many of you know him very well. And, of course, some other folks from the Dallas Fed that we've had on the show, like Pierre Arrhenius. Michael, we're talking about the new annual report, the 2003 annual report for the Federal the Dallas Fed, and the subject is productivity. And Michael, productivity has increased significantly, as you pointed out. And one of the main reasons is technology, isn't it?
Absolutely, especially in the service sector. The different thing about this expansion is that for the first time in a long time, productivity is not just showing up in the manufacturing sector; it's showing up in the service sector, and this is easy to realize because if you're just looking around all the new tools that are out there helping you do things, such as kiosks at airport where you can get tickets instead of having a ticket agent,
right.
ATMs, barcode scanners, toll tag readers. There's a list of 20 or 30 new technologies which have made us more productive in the service.
Let's take the ticket thing for an example. Years ago, I called my travel agent, they made the reservations for me. I drove to their office, or they drove to my office. We exchanged money and tickets, and I had a physical ticket. Now we go online, we make our reservation, we push a button, we get an email confirmation, and then maybe let me put it this way, traveling between my office and the airport has been greatly simplified over where it was years ago, but it came at a cost to some of the people who were in the middle, didn't it?
Right. Right now, for example, your choice is to go use a ticket agent at the airport or even download your boarding pass online.
Right.
If you go use a ticket agent at the airport and get your boarding pass, it costs the airline, Continental Airlines, $3.68. But if you do it from their kiosk, it only costs 16 cents a passenger. That's 16 cents compared to $3.68. That's a huge cost savings. But it has meant, of course, that people who used to stand there and give you your punch in 1,000 keys, it seems like, and give you your ticket, have had to find something else to do. But that is the history of the world. In fact, that is exactly the way that progress is made. There are two kinds of progress, microeconomic progress and macro. Micro occurs when somebody finds a better way of doing something, such as a ticket kiosk. And then in the economy, that labor gets released to go do something else. And macroeconomic progress occurs when that person gets recycled from an old job to a new one. We still have their old output. We still have the tickets now, but they can go make VCRs or do whatever. You know, they can go be doctors.
Right.
People. So that's how we get more productive as a nation.
But the problem that we've got right now, and you and I have talked about this a little bit before, is because it's happened in all this change, all this productivity has really kind of compounded to a point where it's being very dramatically evident right now. Because of that, and because some people who have been displaced are not trained for the new jobs, it's created a lot of problems right now, hasn't it, for some folks?
Yes, except for it's just not right now. This is the history of the nation. It's the history of America is one eternal grapes of wrath. At one time, 95% of us had worked on farms, and so
right.
we had to use 95 out of 100 people just for our food. So on
to
our grand
us.
List of things, food, clothing, and shelter, we couldn't get down very far.
Right.
It was only through getting people off the farm and then into factories, and then eventually after out of factory jobs and into service sector jobs that we've been able to have so much stuff. It takes people to move down. You have to move people to new industries in order to get down your list of needs and wants.
What does all this mean? Help us break this down to how small business owners can take this new reality. And I guess I shouldn't say, as you point out, I shouldn't say it's new, but it is our reality right now. And from the standpoint of not only training our employees, but competing against competitors that we know and competing against competitors that we the new competitors that are out there. How do we internalize all this and make some sense of it and find our way in this new reality?
The one most important thing for small business owners to know, the new thing, is that you've got to start thinking globally and acting globally. You know, we can't just think globally. There are a lot of workers abroad who would be happy to work for U.S. companies at less money, at more money than they can make over there, and at less money than you have to pay somebody here. In other words, I want people to think about outsourcing, exactly the opposite of what some of the politicians are telling you, that you shouldn't outsource jobs. Malarkey. This is the source of growth in the American economy, is that we find a new, better, cheaper way. And don't worry about the U.S. workers. They will get reemployed. And the chances that history shows and the data shows that historically they have gotten better employed at better, higher-paying jobs. So we can't become protectionist about this. Small business owners need to start thinking. I would recommend that you, and I know folks who do this, that you look for the cheapest cost labor. And if you can employ it, employ it. That means somebody, and it could be me, it could be anybody, has to get out. Their job gets taken by somebody to whom work has been outsourced, but we can't stop it. Japan tried to stop it. Japan tried to become protectionist as a nation, mm-hmm. and they fell and fell and fell.
Well, and, of course, China did for centuries.
China did, and they found their living standards in the year 1978 before the reform being exactly the same as they were in the year one.
Right.
So, the solution is not to run from protection. I mean, it's not to run from competition and seek protection. Protectionism just makes people weak.
That's right.
How many people do you know that were protected, say, growing up and grew up strong?
Right.
It's competition that makes you strong.
Stand by.
Foreign languages.
Stand by, Michael. We have to take a quick break. We're going to be right back, ladies and gentlemen, with our friend Michael Cox right after these messages. He's the co-author of the book Myths of the Rich and Poor. 10 to tell. Stay with us. We're back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame. 23 is not 23. It's 7 till. I'm looking at the 3 over here, folks, and it's 7 till. I'm trying to do the math. I'm not doing it very well. It is absolutely not 23. It's 7 minutes until the hour. And I don't have dyslexia, folks. I'm just, I don't know why. I'm went brain dead for a minute there. It is 7 till, and we're visiting with our good friend Michael Cox, the Senior Vice President and Chief Economist for the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. And once again, folks, I encourage you to go to their website, dallasfed.org, and get their annual report. If you want to, just get, you can get the thing in PDF and just clip out the content. You don't have to get the numbers and all the other stuff in the back that you probably don't care about, but get this information on productivity. It will open your eyes on some things. Michael, congratulations. I know that you're the author of most of this. Congratulations. Well done.
Thank you, Jim.
Okay, you encouraged us a few minutes ago to outsource, to go to other parts of the world and look for employees. I don't think that's how small business owners are going to do it. I think they're going to take a different path. And here's how I think they're going to do it. And this is how I've been recommending that they do it for 2 or 3 years now. And that is, I think they're going to get to where you want them to be by first doing business overseas. The first thing they got to do is they got to find customers overseas. And then they're going to find opportunities outside of those customer relationships. They're going to meet people. They're going to find people to do other kinds of business with. To me, that's how this is going to happen for small business.
Well, some of them will. Some of them will go straight to the labor market to do it. I gave a speech out at a conference in Las Vegas back in April that was called the Centric Outsourcing Event, where outsourcers from all over the world convened to discuss strategies on how they outsource effectively. There were people there from France who had outsourced jobs to America for wine businesses. Mm-hmm. The guy who introduced me worked in a company. He was the owner of a company that was him and four other Americans in a programming job, programming company, and they had 100 Chinese folks working for them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's a good model, I think. What Americans have done, we have been actually, think about it, fairly parochial. We have asked the rest
right.
of the world to learn our language, to
right.
come over here, but we still expect the rest of the world to make adjustments toward us. But in today's world, we need not just think globally, we need to act globally. Get out there, learn their language, learn their culture, go visit their countries, think about them as a resource for us. America only has 5% of the world population. The problem is not that we're outsourcing too many jobs. The problem is that we're not creating enough global entrepreneurs. We could employ every individual in this whole country as an executive or manager in a company of, say, 100 people, where the top five people at the top of the corporate pyramid were us, and the other 95 people working for us were foreigners. That's the ratio
right.
of us to them.
Right.
So that's the new model. The new model is to actually act globally. Don't wait for the rest of the world to come to you. Go to them. Think about how you can make it happen. And it's a lot easier than people think. This is a secret to wealth. It's not the secret to poverty. I'm not trying to give anybody a solution which will make them poorer.
Right.
Quite the opposite.
Well, the reason I said what I did is because what you're talking about, even though I basically agree with you, what you're talking about is not an intuitive process for a small business. They need a resource. They need some help. They need somebody to be an employee or an associate or a partner or a vendor. It's not mm-hmm. it's not intuitive for them to look to Bangladesh or Guatemala or China or Sweden. It's not intuitive for them to do that. But what is intuitive for them is to sell things. And if they work with the U.S. Commercial Service, which is part of the Department of Commerce, to find customer opportunities in other parts of the world, that's intuitive, and that will help them do what you just said: learn a language, understand cultures, meet people over there, and then see other opportunities that then become intuitive.
I agree with that, and that's a great solution for getting started. But down that path, you're going to eventually face some psychological barrier that people here are trying to beat into you that you should not. It's fine
right.
to sell goods abroad, but you should never not. It's un-American to employ a foreign worker. What a ridiculous
right.
idea.
Yeah.
You know, you should employ the best worker you can get anywhere for the money.
Michael
sure.
Cox, you are a visionary, and the things that you say are going to come to pass. They're just not something. Your ideas are just not comfortable with a lot of people right now. But it's just a matter of time, and I think that's where we're going to be very soon. Thank you for being here. Good job today, as always. We appreciate you being here again. Congratulations on the great work that you did in the 2003 annual report.
Thanks, Jim. Have a good
Michael,
one.
Michael Cox, ladies and gentlemen, he'll be back. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest entrepreneurial country in the world. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. This program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.